This is Unhurried, and I'm your host, Doug Kyle. You know, life can feel like a race, rushing to the next thing, never time to reflect. But there is incredible value in slowing down with God to take in His perspective, His presence, His pace. I became a believer when I was 14 years old, and I got off to a great start with lots of promise. It was all fresh for me. I hadn't grown up in a Christian family, and so there was just an excitement about my newfound faith in the Lord. But then we moved while I was in high school to a new school, new friends, new challenges, and as time went on, God sort of took a back seat in my life. Suddenly, school, friends, sports, everything else became more important in my life than my relationship with God. Where does that prodigal spirit come from? Welcome. This is episode 26 of Unhurried. I'm your host, Doug Kyle. So glad you're following along with us. And today I want to do something a little different. We're going to do a little bit of a one-off. We're in the middle of this series in this podcast looking at Illustrated by Jesus, which are these parables of Jesus from the book of Matthew. But today I want to go in a little different direction. I want to look at one parable that we won't cover in this series because it comes from Luke, and yet it is such a familiar as well as powerful parable, and it's the parable of the prodigal sons. Some of the parables that Jesus told appear in several of the Gospels, sometimes three of them, sometimes a couple of them, and then there's a handful of them that Jesus only told in one of the Gospels, and the prodigal story is the one that comes only in the Gospel of Luke, and yet it has such a powerful message to us that I want to share a little bit to you about that today as well. It's a kind of a funny term if you think about it, prodigal. What do we mean by prodigal? We've used it a lot when we talk about this parable, and it really is the only time we talk about it is when we talk about this parable. It doesn't seem like we use it in life anywhere else, but a definition of prodigal is simply this: recklessly extravagant or having spent everything. And so that really does fit with this parable as well. Although for us, when we think of prodigal, we tend to think of it as a bad term, as wild behavior, wild living, far from God, as if to be prodigal is by very definition means to be something bad, something wrong. But if you look at the definition more closely, a recklessly extravagant, having spent everything, is also a very good definition of God. And so in many ways, that's a good way to talk about God as being recklessly extravagant and having spent everything. He gave His own Son for us. And in this parable, we're going to see that it's really the parable of the prodigal sons, and that you can be compliant and be a prodigal as well. You might not be in a far place, but your heart can be far from God as well. And so I like to think about this whenever I refer to it and talking with someone about it. I talk about the parable of the prodigal sons, and sometimes they seem surprised. Wait, isn't it the prodigal son? No, there's actually two sons in this story that are being addressed, and we see that in a number of different ways. There are two different kinds of prodigal, two different ways to be extravagant and far from God in this case. And we see this right away in when Jesus tells the parable in Luke. He has a couple different groups in mind when he speaks. And it's found in Luke 15, and the chapter begins with these words: "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus." That was one group, the tax collectors and sinners. This was the group that was sort of looked down on in that context. They were often despised by those as people that didn't fit in to the religious structure of the day. the one group was the tax collectors and the sinners. And you say, well, that fits perfectly with the story about a prodigal son, except verse 2 says, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. And so this now is a second group that were gathered there listening. And they were on the other extreme. These were the Pharisees and the tax collect, or the, I'm sorry, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. They were the ones that were celebrated as the exemplary individuals in that society. They were the ones that shined. And so if Jesus is going to tell a parable about a bad son and a good son, everyone in the crowd that day figured they already knew who's who, which is which. Clearly, the tax collectors, sinners, they're the bad guys. They're the bad son. And the Pharisees, the teachers of the law, these exemplary, model, spiritual, super spiritual individuals, they must be the good son in the parable. And then Jesus does indeed begin the parable, and he begins with these words in verse 11. There was a man who had two sons. And right away, we're reminded that this is not the story about one son, but two. He goes in length then about the first son, the one that is really more well-known when we talk about this story. It was the younger son who asked his father for his inheritance early and then set off for, we're told, a distant country. And he squandered his wealth on wild living. And the word squandered in this passage, in this story, means he wasted it. He lived his life in a wasteful way. We will later learn in the parable that part of his money that he got from his father was depleted through prostitution. And we can find ourselves kind of connecting with this first son in that we have been entrusted with so much in this life. All that we have in this life is entrusted to us by God. So many wonderful things that God has put into our lives, but it's so easy for us to waste them and squander them and not really fully appreciate all that God has given us and all that he has entrusted to us. And I guess the son got to the low point when we're told that he ended up feeding pigs in order to make ends. He ran out of everything. He ended up hiring himself out feeding pigs where he was so hungry that he envied the pigs for the food that they had. And, you know, when Jesus got to that part of the story, I imagine the crowd gasped. You know, I mean, there in that context, there was few things that would be as shocking as a Jewish son who has hired himself out to feed pigs, these animals that were ceremonially unclean. It was about as low as you could go. It was certainly the low point of the first son's life. We are told that it was there somewhere, you know, when he was feeding pigs that he came to his senses. And he decides, you know, even the servants in my father's house are eating better than I am and living better than I am. And so he comes up with this speech that he rehearses that he will say to his father, asking him to bring him back not as a son anymore, but just simply as a servant in the household, one of the workers. And he returns home, and we're told the father is looking for him. He sees him a long way off. He runs off. He embraces his son. He hugs him and he kisses him. The son starts out on this rehearsed speech, and he can't even get it out before the father just celebrates him home. And he brings him home, and he throws this huge feast, and they celebrate that the son is home back again. And easily that could have been the end of the story. Many people think it is, that the story of the prodigal son ends there. That for many people is where this story ends. But remember, we said there are two sons and there are two different ways to be prodigal. And so right away, Jesus continues the story and focuses now on the older brother, the other son, the second way to be prodigal. As I said, there are two ways to be prodigal, two ways to be wild, two ways to be far from God. And since there were two audiences here, both the the sinners, tax collectors, one group, as well as the Pharisees and the teachers of law, the other group. Now Jesus adjusts his focus on the other group there, the ones that were seen to be sort of the exemplary model believers of the day. And the father goes out and finds the older brother, the son who is out in the field working. And just as the father had initiated contact with the younger son, that is, he was watching for him. As soon as he saw him, he ran out to greet him. In the same way, we have the father initiating contact with the other son, the older son, as he goes out in the field to find him. He tells him, "Have you heard the celebration? Your younger brother is home. Come, let's celebrate. It's a great day. It's a wonderful day." And certainly we expect the older brother to drop everything, race over, and hug his younger brother. I mean, if the aged father could run to greet his son, certainly the older brother could run as well. Instead, you know, we're surprised. We're told that the older brother became angry and refused to go in. I don't know, maybe at that point the Pharisees and the crowd began to squirm. As Jesus got to this point of the story, the older brother, who was not excited about the wayward brother coming home. The older brother, it turns out, is not in the mood to celebrate. And his words are so revealing. There in Luke 15, 29, he says this. He answers his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you." Now, those are important words. Although he's the oldest son with the most privileges in that culture and still his inheritance intact, he viewed his relationship to his father as a slave, not a son. That's critical that we see that. The older son had never left home, but he had left the father's heart. He was so far, so distant from the joy and the celebration and the rejoicing of his father. It is really a different kind of prodigal, another kind of prodigal, where we become slaves to duty. Even though God embraces us as a child, a son, a daughter, we start to see that relationship purely in terms of duty, even harsher than that, as slavery, as if we are slaving. This is just so hard. God expects so much of me. And we start to see our relationship with God in those terms. We are not told what the older son did. The story sort of ends there because really the point of the story, this is where Jesus was driving all the way along to really shake up the religious leaders of his day and say, "Why aren't you rejoicing with me that these that were far from God are now being brought back into God's family?" And the story really is left hanging because it's up to them and I would say up to us to say, what do we want to do with a God who celebrates prodigals back home? And suddenly when we start to see that there are two sons in this story and two different ways of being far from God, geographically far from God, but also in our attitudes and our heart being far from God, we can be miles away on the planet, or we could just be miles away in our mind and our heart from God. We could be outwardly doing all the right things, and yet inwardly our hearts and our minds are distant from God and distant from his perspective. And so it kind of begs the question, whose side is Jesus on? And the answer is, he's on both sides. He told this parable because he meant for us to see God and himself in the position of this father who is initiating contact with both, who longs for both of them to be brought into the celebration. He longs for the wild living, reckless and raucous, tradition challenging prodigals to be liberated from their self-imposed slavery and discover their place as God's children, to be brought into that. But he also longs for the clean living, tradition keeping, duty driven prodigals to be liberated from their slavery, from seeing their walk with the Lord and their relationship with God is purely in terms of duty. And also come to the party also discover their place as God's children. He's on both sides. And whichever way we tend to err, if we tend to be wild in just these reckless ways that are self-destructive, he invites us back to the celebration, to be celebrated as a child. But if we're more, and I probably err on this side, where we're more likely to just kind of do all the outward things, but start to see our relationship with God as duty and slavery, and not really sharing in his joy and his celebration, he also initiates us. He comes to us and invites us back into that party that he's throwing, the celebration that he wants us to experience. And it turns out in the end, God's plan for both types of prodigals is exactly the same. He wants both of them to exchange their slaving for celebrating. Whichever way that tendency towards slavery reveals itself. Because in the end, we are all prodigals. And yet our Father God has one solution. He wants to free us from that which would entrap us and enslave us, and instead to invite us into this joyful relationship where we experience all the bounty and the wonder and the beauty of being in a relationship with God. Well, again, we're not going to cover this particular parable in the Sunday morning messages illustrated by Jesus series, and so I wanted to include it here for those who are following along on the podcast, because it is such a powerful parable and something that I don't want us to forget about in the middle of thinking about these fantastic illustrations by Jesus. As always, I'd love to hear from you. If you have questions or comments, just let me know that you're listening along. I would love to hear from you. And you can do so at unhurriedpodcast@gmail.com, and I'll see your email. Also, if you want to give this podcast 5 stars, I'd appreciate it. And leave a comment, an encouraging comment would be great as well. For other listeners, that helps kind of spread the word as well. Well, until next time, this has been Unhurried with me, your host, Doug Kyle, and I look forward to talking soon.